are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Matt came down with some sort of throat issue and now can't talk. You and me, one-on-one, all night long.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Yeah, just me and you, kind of a solo date as opposed to a group date.
Ooh.
Which is, you know.
Candlelight and everything?
Yeah, that's how I roll, baby.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Partially bald now. Ripping his hair out watching Odubel Herrera strike out and take 30 seconds to take a hack that he falls down on. But, jeez, Odubel Herrera, what a character.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Joining me on this episode is a special guest. It's Lance Brodowski from Big 3 Sports. Lance, thank you for joining us.
Hey, I guess. Oh, cut you off there. I was getting real excited. I mean, thanks for having me on. It's going to be a lot of fun. Just me and you, right?
Yeah, just me and you.
Love it.
Kind of a solo date as opposed to a group date.
Ooh.
Which is
candlelight and everything?
Yeah, that's how I roll, baby. Unfortunately, Mike got called into work. Matt came down with some sort of throat issue and now can't talk. So you and me, one-on-one, all night long. So Lance, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, what you do over at Big 3 Sports, and then anywhere else you write, talk for, and then where people can reach you on social media.
Yeah, awesome. So the big thing is my Twitter handle is at Lance Brozdow, so LanceBrozdow. It's for 7 letters of my last name. It's not bros, like B-R-O-Z. I sometimes get that. Like people think I'm trying to be cool and hip, but I'm not. It's just my last name. So Big 3 Sports, actually, I run, I own, and I operate it. I'm the managing editor over there. I run all the fantasy baseball content, all the baseball content, and I have a basketball writer. So we've been kind of circulating around with some other writers, but you know, it's pretty tough to keep people involved when there's no financial incentive. But it's definitely a brainchild of mine that I've had running since late in college, and I've flourished with it, and it's been a ton of fun. It's a really cool place. I basically have a sandbox to do whatever I want, and I really like helping out my other basketball writer. So I also write for Razzball.com. I do a column every Sunday for them, but I have been off the last 2 Sundays because I'm on a little bit of a road trip right now. I'm actually in an Airbnb in the middle of Chicago, so I've never been to Chicago before. I just had some Luminati's pizza before this is going on, so I'm in a
very
bit of a
nice
food coma. So but yeah, Razzball.com, I do Sunday columns. I generally, they're nice enough to just kind of give me a sandbox again, so a lot of my content I come up with is kind of self-generated. But yeah, right there, I also do Tuesday night recaps for the SB Nation Cardinals site, Viva Albertos. I run a podcast called the Two Strike Approach Podcast, which kind of, it does a fantasy show on Thursday nights, which we're kind of phasing in and out. But I really like doing a lot of one-on-one podcasts with other writers in the industry, not even fantasy side. You know, I talked to Shahadev Sharma, who's the Athletic Chicago Cubs reporter. I talked to Sean Lehman, anyone who does any R work or knows any data analysis. He's the founder of the Lehman database, which is kind of one of the main things they have you download as a package into R when you get going on that. And that's been a cool side project of mine. And I can't really think of anywhere else I write. Oh, Baseball Prospectus, too. I write on the BP Bronx side. We've been kind of going an overhaul there. So I have my feet in a lot of different waters, so to speak. But Big 3 Sports and Razzball are different, my two. I play in a bunch of fantasy expert leagues, too. I'm in two that in particular that I'm very happy to have been doing pretty well in. CBS Sports runs an NL-only league, an auction league. I'm in there with Gray Albright of Razzball and a couple other people from Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. And then they also have an auction league I'm in. So, man, that's my spiel. I got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah,
I apologize for taking up a ton of time there. But
you're one of the few people in the industry that I really empathize with, because I'm right up there with you, talking and writing for a bunch of different places. And, yeah, it's sometimes you got to hustle, though.
Exactly, man. It's the only way to advance in the profession itself. So, you know, gotta get the name out there as much as you can.
All right. Well, you can always reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB, and I'll just give a quick shout out. If you want to give us a 5-star review, really helps us out and gets you entered in to win some cool stuff. So keep those 5-star reviews coming. I said I was gonna award a 5-star review to someone, or award a T-shirt to someone for a 5-star review. So Lance, please just bear with me while I find one that I like real quick.
Go for it.
Unless here, why don't we involve the guest? So I'm going to give you pick a number 1 through. Let's see. It looks like we have 65 ratings. I'm going to guess it's about 55 star reviews. Go ahead and pick a number 1 through 50.
I got to go with my number from high school and baseball and everything I used to play. It's number 8.
All right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All right, here we go. It is by JSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSS is taking it up a notch with their new crew, more podcasts per week, and fantasy analysis. You get more takes from a bunch of seasoned pros. They do more podcasts than most other shows out there and bring in great guests from around the industry. Worth an addition for any fantasy baseball player. So, Jay, if you want a free T-shirt, hit me up. I will. You can either hit me up on Twitter, at JustinMasonFWFB, or via email, JustinMasonFantasy@gmail.com. I'll make sure I send you out your free T-shirt. Thanks, Lance.
Yeah, no problem. That's a good review right there. Jeez, you get some high praise. I like it.
Right? You have to bribe the audience.
You got to bribe. It's the only way to get there.
So keep those reviews coming, and we'll keep giving away free stuff. But let's jump in and talk about some fantasy baseball stuff. And we're going to start with Neil Walker, who is traded to the Milwaukee Brewers for virtually nothing. He now mans the second base for them pretty much every day going forward. So what are your thoughts on Neil Walker's and the rest of the Brewers that this affects?
Yeah, this is an interesting move. The Brewers are in a kind of an odd spot because I think they're about 5.5, 6.5 back right now. And the Cardinals have pushed ahead. They won 8 in a row. And all of a sudden, the Brewers are looking like that third team, almost like the third team out, like third wheel on the date. You know, it's kind of sad because I enjoyed watching the Brewers for a bit, actually. And they were a fun team to watch. Knievel and the Pens have been good. You know, Thames has had an unbelievable year coming over from the KBO. And you look at Walker, and he's had almost a virtually worthless season in roto formats, you know. And the interesting thing here for me is that it kind of makes Sogard, who is kind of more NL-only relevant, but I still keep an eye on a lot of those guys. And Jonathan Villar, basically irrelevant now because you have Arcia, who's the better defensive shortstop. He's going to be playing short. You can't move Villar over there. I don't know how much Sogard plays short, but I doubt that. You know, it's just – it's kind of an odd scenario where they acquire Neil Walker, but the odd thing about Walker, too, is that I was looking at some of his stats year over year. Since last year, he's had kind of three really productive years, and this year's kind of been slightly an outlier. And the most interesting thing is that he used to – mash lefties from the right side of the plate, switch hitter. So he had a 420 WOBA last season against as a right-handed batter, and this year that's plummeted to 264. And versus right-handed pitchers as a lefty, he's kind of stayed the same. So the way I wanted to tie this back was kind of to think, you know, Miller Park has inflated left-handed bats to some extent this year. So I'm interested to see if this inflates his season as a whole a little bit going forward. But I'm kind of perplexed. I don't know, Justin, if you know why he's basically become irrelevant from the right-hand side of the plate when that was used to be a stronger side of the plate for his almost entire career, I believe.
You almost wonder if the off-season injury and surgery is really affecting him this year. Mm. You know, I mean, he did have, you know, one of the reasons, you know, he didn't go after that big contract is because he had the off-season surgery. He was going to be injured. We didn't know what he was going to be like coming back, so he just took the qualifying offer. So you almost wonder if that's been part of it. I think part of it, too, is maybe pitchers aren't afraid of him right now, and they're just attacking him. Highest first strike rate pretty much of his career. They're attacking the zone more than they did last year. I think pitchers aren't afraid of him right now, and I think for good reason. Like you said, just not hitting with much pop. Not handling right-handers well. I don't know. I mean, in terms of Neil Walker, like, I don't think necessarily his value changes a whole lot just moving to Milwaukee. I mean, it's a little bit better lineup. It's a little bit better park. But it's not like, you know, he's on, like, what, like a 15-home-run pace? Not even 15-home-run pace. So now he's on a 17-home-run pace, maybe. You know?
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I mean, he's he's kind of had this funky season. I don't even know if going into like next year, I want to look at him as kind of a sleeper. I don't know. Do you know his contract situation? Is he signed through the year?
He's a free agent because he took the qualifying offer, so he's a free agent season. But I mean, I think he'll have a hard time finding a full time job. He's not a good defensive player, so it's not like he's got that to fall back on. This has been pretty much like his worst season in about 4 or 5 years. So I just don't know. I'm sure somebody will scoop him up, you know. Maybe he'll do like a cheap 1 or 2 year deal or something, try to kind of reestablish his value. But I mean, he's 31, almost 32 years old at this point. You know, he may have just kind of missed out on being, you know, getting that big deal that he probably thought he would after signing the qualifying deal this last year.
Yeah, and I think if you ask a lot of Mets fans too, like last year, I think he had 25 home runs or something like that and really stepped it up. That was one of like the better signings I think they've made probably in a while, in my opinion. You know, they paid a lot for Cespedes and some of these other guys, but Walker looked like a mainstay, I thought personally, because I'm from the New York area, so I got SNY, the network that the Mets are run on, and I watched a decent amount of those games because I really liked that pitching staff last year, and Walker was always pretty consistent. He also had a decent stretch. I remember streaming him a bit this year. I think it might have been maybe in early June or something like that. He was hitting pretty well, but yeah, this split thing's kind of odd that he's flip-flopped, so he's not that good as a right-handed batter as he used to be in his career, so... it's interesting. I don't really know. I mean, I don't know the science behind switch hitting too much. You know, generally guys have a stronger side of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I know another case where it's flipped this much. You know, I can't think of one off the top of my head. You know, Pablo Sandoval, I remember, has always been terrible from the right side. Is it?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah.
And you know, he's, I doubt if we're going to look at him, you know, next year in a Giants uniform and see him flip flop the other way. So this is funky. I think I agree with you in saying that it must be something with the injury, maybe something mechanically on from that side of the plate, from the right-handed batter's box in his swing is affecting him maybe more than as a left-handed batter. So I guess we'll see. We'll see moving forward. I mean, I agree with the net effect of this move is probably basically stable. You know, he had regular playing time. He kind of still has regular playing time.
I think,
you know,
for
maybe
the most part,
leagues,
it really pretty much buries, like you mentioned, Villar, who has just never returned to what we saw last year and has just really struggled. And now he goes – and you know, it probably helps bury Hernan Perez a little bit too, because now you've got Villar, who can be a utility guy too, so that's going to take away some of Perez's at-bats. It really, if anything, just muddies – an already kind of muddied situation in Milwaukee. I think you misspoke earlier when you said that the Brewers were like 5 games out. They're actually only 2 games out because of that Cubs losing streak recently. So like they're right in the thick of thing, and the whole division is right in the thick of thing. The Pirates are 4 games back in fourth place in that division.
Yeah, so, that came out of nowhere.
Yeah, I honestly had no idea the Pirates were doing that.
Yeah, me neither. I usually keep a very close tabs in the NL Central too. I knew the Cardinals were streaking. I went to 2 of those games over the weekend against the Braves. I saw them in St. Louis. That was a lot of fun. But yeah, I know that. I mean, I saw Dickie, which is probably one of the only gems he's thrown in a while. Or it wasn't really a gem, but it pissed me off. So I guess you could say it was a gem. But yeah, I mean, you got a 4-team race in the Central now. I mean, It's interesting, you know. I didn't even realize. Good correction on your part there. That they're 2.5 out. Maybe I was looking at something else, but maybe not too long ago. Maybe the last time I checked the standings was early last week, and they were 6 out. Who knows? But everyone's in it right now at this point. You know, everyone thought it was, you know, the Brewers to lose to the Cubs. Basically, anyone's game with no one really tanking to any extent. You know, the Cubs really haven't run away with anything. They still need a lot of their guys to get right. So I think the Brewers are right in. They got a shot. I think they'd really do well if they got Anderson back from the DL, which I think he's throwing some rehab starts, so that'd be a pretty good addition. Nelson got lit up his last time out, too. That was a little bit funky. I think he had an injury problem, I think, right after that start. They started barking about that. So, yeah, the Brewers are in it. I'm interested to see what happens. Who do you think wins that division at the end of the day, Justin?
I don't know. I'm going to go with the Cubs. I mean, I think from top to bottom, they're the best team in the division.
Yeah.
And they're just playing down to their competition's level, in my opinion. You know, I part of me wants to say the Cardinals, and it's not because I want to see Matt Thompson happy, because I think he does his best work when he's angry. their rotation is really good, and I think it's kind of a sneaky good rotation, which is what wins the playoffs. and I really don't want to see the Dodgers win a World Series.
That's funny, because they were my preseason pick, actually, on my site. I picked them versus the Astros, which has looked fantastic all year. I'm sure I wasn't the only one to do that, but you're just super anti-Dodgers, Justin.
I'm a Giants fan, so, like, you know.
Okay, there we go.
And then this has been a brutal year as a Giants fan, so I just have to remember that I've got three World Series trophies to sleep with.
Mm-hmm. You do, and a lot of beef on Matt for Matheny bringing in Waka a couple years ago, and Ishikawa popping that homer. So I'm sure you bring that up to him, and he cries a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't rub it in too bad, because we got so many world championships that, like, you know, it'd be kind of mean to just rub it in his face all the time. But let's move on and talk about Rajay Davis, who's been on a little bit of a hot streak. Was a pretty popular kind of sleeper coming in the year, because he was moving to the Athletics, where he was going to have some full-time work. And last year, in a part-time role, stole 43 bases, hit 12 home runs. This year has been a little bit of a letdown, but considering where you got him, you know, 5 home runs, 25 stolen bases, it's not too bad of value. But what are your thoughts on Rajay Davis rest of the way?
Yeah, rest of the way, he's interesting. I saw on Fangraphs that he's actually had a bit of problem with the breaking ball this year on curveballs and sliders. He's basically gone to a negative pitch value for Pitch Info, and they do that little stat on the bottom if you scroll down on the player page. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't know if that's deterioration of skill and hand-eye coordination as he ages, but, you know, the steals haven't really gone away, and the A's kind of run a lot because they're not that good. And I don't think they've realized, Billy Bean maybe hasn't realized, that inefficient stealing probably isn't the smartest thing for a team to be doing. I don't know how efficient they are as a whole. But, you know, yeah, as you mentioned, yeah, his price was right around. I was looking at his ADP, actually. I've been doing a lot of ADP searching from preseason, from March. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but I find it kind of interesting to look through and see, like, oh, geez, he was drafted over him. And he went right around 200 overall. So, as you mentioned, that I think probably from priors is probably inflated a little bit. Because I remember him always kind of being that 20th round guy or something.
Yeah, he was the guy everybody always forgot about.
Like, yeah, exactly.
When nobody ever, like, you know, people would spend $5 on him in an AL only, and everybody would be like, meh. But then you'd make $15 worth of value
from easily.
Him. And yeah. So this year, of course, was the year everybody was all in on him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and they paid $15, and they're making $5.
Yeah, he was a classic, like, AL only guy, too. I remember seeing in a couple AL only leagues. Everyone was like, oh, if I don't get, like, he was one of the few guys that you look at and you go, oh, okay, cool, that's like 20 bags. And you kind of got those 20 bags. You know, he's had basically since his entire career, he's posting 25-plus stolen base seasons aside from 2015, I think I saw. But this is like the one year where you pay his actual value, what he's given back to you, and he doesn't give it back, which is just classic. It's just classic Rajay Davis, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's too – I mean, I think part of the problem is he got maybe got a little bit overexposed. You know, I mean, this is a guy who has, for the last few years, has been more of a part-time player, played in spots, played virtually as much against lefties as he does righties. This year, he started off in kind of a more full-time role. He's hitting .220 against righties, which, I mean, has really been the thing that's dragging down his batting average, because he's hitting .271 against lefties. I think rest of the way, I mean, you can't expect a decent average. But, I mean, he does still, even at age 36, almost 37, have enough speed in his legs to steal another 10 bags. So, I mean, if you need stolen bases, and most people do, he's worth a shot in even shallower formats.
Oh, definitely, yeah. If you're in, like, a close stolen base race, you know, this is kind of that time, the crunch time in a lot of roto leagues where you're looking. I start to really comb through, like, what stats I think I can make up ground and are a couple points in if I need it. And, you know, if you're close in stolen bases and he's sitting on your waiver, I bet he's sitting on your waiver in the majority of 10-team leagues. Mm-hmm. I bet he's out there in some 12-team leagues, because a lot of people maybe have given up if they're on the bottom half of the road rankings or whatever. But, yeah, if he's a guy you can slide in and maybe steal a couple bags in the next couple months with, I wouldn't be surprised if he steals, you know, 4 to 5 rest of the season or something like that. So you could definitely find some value with him there. I don't mind to pick up a Rajay Davis if he needs stolen bases, but – yeah, as we mentioned, it is kind of funky that he's had kind of an off year, so I'd be interested to see where he's valued going into 2018. We'll see if he improves.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see if he even lands a role anywhere, because he is on a one-year deal. This may be kind of the end for Rajay Davis.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. I don't know any contracts today. Jeez. Gene Hammond Walker, I got no idea. Out of the contract loop, but I didn't know that. I'd be interested. I feel like if he does get picked up, it'll be in kind of a utility role as opposed to like an everyday starter.
starting outfielder. As we were just talking with Walker, you know, you were concerned that he won't find a starting role anywhere. I think you can reiterate that for Davis, too. You know, if he goes to a team that basically isn't like the Athletics, a team that's kind of out of it from square one, you know, I can't think of any outfields, you know, in the AL or anything where they kind of need that speed guy in the corner. I feel like a lot of teams are set. The outfield's just been so deep this year, even in fantasy, too. Maybe it doesn't apply so well directly to major league real life teams, you know, but I mean, we've experienced it this year where outfield's been very deep in fantasy. So, you know, even a guy like Davis, I know he provides a lot on the stolen base path, but you look at a guy like Bradley Zimmer, you know, a little bit more upside, much, much, much younger going into next year. I'm much more keen on him as opposed to a guy like Davis. I mean, of course, differential in value, but I'll be interested.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Cole Hamels, because I got a question the other day. A guy who is going for a championship. He's in a dynasty league. I can't remember if it was dynasty or keeper, but he's in a league where you keep players from year to year. He's going for a championship, and he wanted to know, like, he needs a starting pitcher. And the Cole Hamels owner is looking to sell and rebuild. And he wanted, I believe it was Victor Robles, for Cole Hamels. And so there were some people who, and if I was wrong on the prospect, I apologize, whoever it was. It was in our Facebook group, Facebook.com/ Friends of Fantasy Benefits. So you go there if you want to join the discussions. He wanted this one of these top prospects for Cole Hamels, and a lot of people are like, yep, you play to win the game, you flags fly forever, you make the deal. And I'm usually that guy, but man, do I not trust or like Cole Hamels. So, Lance, I want to get your thoughts. What are your thoughts on Cole Hamels for the rest of this year?
That's tough. That's really tough. Victor Robles is a name. I follow prospects pretty well. I put him in my top 100 list on my site a bit ago. And Robles is a guy I think I had two or three behind Ronaldo Cunha, who is my number one prospect. But with prospects like this, I know – the idea is to go for it and win. You know, if you're in a win now mode and you have a guy like Robles sitting there and you need pitching. I just, in my mind, the value of Victor Robles, what I believe the value of Victor Robles is, can get more than a guy like Cole Hamels. And I won't drop names specifically as to what, you know, if this kid's listening or this guy's listening as to what he should try to get for Robles. But Hamels right now is just in this really weird flux. You know, he's 33. He's always been this kind of high floor, consistent guy that I've personally liked. I liked him a lot. I was hoping for a huge value uptick when he went from Philly to Texas, hoping for the wins to jump back up, because he's always been a guy who's getting snubbed on that. I know there's always stats like run support. He was always at the bottom of the list. But the interesting thing I was looking at on Brooks Baseball with him is that the convergence of his pitch usage. So early in his career, he was much more of a four-seam guy, didn't really use a sinker too much. And if you look at the convergence of all five of his pitches throughout like his entire career, it's basically gone to about even. So he's basically purely a five pitch guy, which is interesting because there's not many five pitch pitchers left in baseball, or effective five pitch pitchers left. So that's a tongue twister right there. But he's throwing that sinker just as much as he's throwing his four seamer, just as much as he's throwing his cutter and all these other things. But I don't think that any of the pitches have been, you know, exceptionally effective, the ones that he goes to a lot more. So the sinker itself hasn't been fantastic this year, and his curveball and his better off-speed pitches hasn't been fantastic this year either. So it's tough, but if you look at his last couple starts, that's where it becomes a little bit more interesting. He's upticked in his cutter usage, which has allowed him to, I think he's thrown six innings in each of his last couple of starts. He's brought the walks down a little bit. You know, he got blown up, I think, five starts ago, but if you look at his last three, he's been pretty decent, and that correlates pretty well with that cutter uptick and the swinging strike rate on that pitch particularly. So he's kind of found something that's working for him, but I guess it's kind of a matter of how much going forward do you actually believe in his skill set? Do you believe that he's that basically these 3.5-ish months that we've seen of him was just a blip and now he's going to be fine, or do you actually think there is deterioration in his skill set as a whole? Because if you look at his strikeout rate, look at his walk rate and everything, that's gone in the wrong direction. So basically to come back full circle to the point, I don't think I would trade Victor Robles for Cole Hamels. I understand the win-now attitude, but I believe personally you could get a lot more for a guy like Victor Robles, especially if you're looking at a rebuilding team, that wants Victor Robles. They'd be willing to give up something a lot more than I think Cole Hamels, especially. So what would you do, Justin?
Well, let me throw it one more back at you, because I actually went back and looked up who the prospect was, and it wasn't Robles.
Sure. Robles
was in a different question. It was Michael Kopech.
Oh, that's Very interesting. So me and Ralph Lifshitz of Rasball, he's the lead prospect over there, did a podcast, and we talked basically through our top 100 lists and the construction of them. And Kopech was a guy we lingered on for a while. And Kopech is, I think, my number two pitching prospect. I have Honeywell first from right-handed pitchers, and I think I have Kopech for right-handed pitchers second. He's inside my top 25. The thing that me and Ralph actually came to an interesting conclusion on is we both were a little bit worried that his velocity is going to catch up with him like it did. So we always get to know a Syndergaard comp because he's got a really good breaking ball and really fast and high velo.
And he calls himself baby Cinder or baby Thor.
Yeah, exactly. So that's great right there. Man, you're catching me in a hole here. I honestly don't think I'd ship Kopech for Hamels. This might just be because I'm more of a prospect guy, and I tend to fall in love with some prospects that I really like the upside of. But me and Ralph's convergence was that we were a little bit worried that the fastball velo would eventually catch up with him. He's going to go down with an injury like Syndergaard did. I hate predicting injuries. That's like the one thing. It's just so tough for me to be like, oh, I don't want this guy because he's going to get injured. Because it's like, he's got a guy, Carlos Gonzalez, throughout his career. You know, he was injury prone, quote unquote, for his entire career until he wasn't. Until, you know, the last 3 years, he plays 150 games. So it's like, where does that injury prone tag go? You know, so it's just, I really don't like, so I want to stay away from the injury side. But that's a real risk with a guy like Kopech who throws like 100, you know, he's probably consistently sitting, I think, around 98 right now as he evens out his velo with his control. But if you look at his last couple starts in the minor leagues, he's been absolutely dominant. And this is another thing that me and Ralph went over on the pod. It was, he just go to Fangraphs and look at his game log. He's pitched deep into games, number one. His control has been fantastic, and he's striking out guys at an insane clip. I'm sure it's above 40%, which is just stupid, getting double A. I wouldn't do it. I don't think I'd do it. Maybe this is just a combination of me liking prospects and not really being too keen on Cole Hamels, but I just don't trust Hamels going forward. I don't know if you do, Justin, but I don't.
And
I can't. I can't trust him.
I mean, we're talking about a guy, and I know he's been better as of late, but, I mean, so far for the entire length of the season, he's striking out less than 6/9.
Yeah.
I mean, he dealt with an injury earlier this year. The curveball has been absolute garbage. And it's no wonder he's going to the cutter more, because the cutter's actually been his best pitch this year.
Yep.
And so, to me, I just, you know, that Texas in the summertime, you know, it just, you can tend to give up more home runs. I don't think he has a ton of this huge upside that I think maybe we're used to seeing from him. You know, the FIP and XFIP are almost a full run over. The XFIP is a full run over, but the FIP is almost a full run over his ERA. I mean, I just think there is, you know, some regression coming, and I think, it's just not something I'm willing to give up a top prospect for. And I'm usually the guy that says, like, if you think this guy puts you over, you make any deal. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the guy who traded Mike Trout, you know, a cheap Mike Trout in an AL-only league to win a championship. You know, I just made a deal with Mike Warner in a league where I traded him in an AL-only league where you keep two players forever at no cost. I traded him Aaron Judge and Carlos Correa for just a shit ton of guys.
Interesting.
Because it was, you know, it was a depth deal. I got a bunch of, like, you know, really, really, really good players. It, you know, it's AL-only, so it's extremely deep. And I want to win, you know, because no one remembers who finishes second. Everybody remembers who the champ is.
That's very good point. I agree with that. I do believe, you know, if you actually think that guy can put you over the top, if you think that that guy is the guy to put your team forward and going forward, then I'm not going to be the one as an analyst to tell you not to do that trade. You know, I get asked, I'm sure you do, Justin, all the time on Facebook and Twitter, you know, you'll see someone shoot you a message, you know, I want player A for player B, you know, what do you think of the situation? And then I'll give them my opinion, and then they'll come back and meet, disagreeing with my opinion, state their case for the player. And I'm like, hey, listen, like, that's a good case. Like, I agree with what you're saying. I just still don't believe in the vacuum with the trade, you know? So it's just a matter of, if you actually think Cole Hamels will put you over the top, then I'm not going to be the one to tell you not to ship Kopech for him. But in a vacuum, in the majority of situations, I would not trade a guy like Kopech for him. And I think that it sounds like you might agree, Justin. And can I actually drop a funny story too about Kopech?
Yeah, of course.
So I was at Sabre Seminar. Was a pretty cool event in Boston last weekend, 2 weekends ago maybe. Mm-hmm. And I was there and I listened to some fantastic, awesome, like, Fangraphs guys were there. There was a lot of Baseball Prospectus people, a lot of people in the industry, and it was really, really cool, fantastic experience. And the MC of it was actually Jason Benetti, So for any White Sox fans out there, he's the play-by-play guy, actually. And so I asked a question to one of the people about James Paxton. I have a bit of a love affair with James Paxton, so I'm very sad to see him on the DL. But I asked a question about James Paxton, and then during the break, they had a little intermission. Benetti came up to me, looks at me, and goes, "Hey, you look like Michael Kopech. Someone should do a side-by-side comparison of you and Michael Kopech." So I thought that was pretty funny. I've heard it before, and I didn't really believe it. But now that I had the White Sox announcer telling me I look like Kopech, I have to agree with it. I don't know. Do you have, like, a person comp, Justin? Like, does anyone tell you look like a certain player?
Oh, man, I hate to admit this on air, but because I have kind of a reddish beard and I let it kind of go crazy, I get the Zach Galifianakis comps.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to go Justin Turner there because you said reddish beard. And I was like, oh, Turner, but is it not that red?
Well, Turner's got one of those, like, Amish, like, stringy beards.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got, like, a real man beard.
Dissing Justin Turner, I love it. That's fantastic. So, Zach Galifianakis. I don't think that's that bad of a cop. I like Zach Galifianakis.
He's a funny dude, right? Yeah, that's,
yeah,
at least
definitely.
I got that.
Between Two Ferns is some great YouTube content right there.
It really is. So, yeah, I mean, like I said before, and you know, those who have listened to the podcast for a long time have – I always say you play for this year. Next year's not guaranteed. Can't tell how many times I've been in a dynasty or keeper league that folded, or I just decided, I'm done with this league. I'm moving on. And you know, so at the end of the day, you do whatever it takes to win, but you better win. Like, there's no worse feeling. Like, you know, I mentioned that trade I made with Mike, in the AL only that we're in. If I lose the league and I traded Correa, you know, I end up finishing in second and I traded Correa and Judge, I'm going to kick myself forever for making that deal.
Yep.
You know, I went for it. I'm going for it. You know, I can't blame the process, but at the end of the day, like, if it doesn't pan out, if for some reason I lose by half a point, I lose by a point, I'm never going to forgive myself for trading two amazing keepers in a league where I could keep them forever. So.
Yeah. That makes sense. I agree with the philosophy. So I'd be interested to see if this kid actually made that deal or guy made that deal. So, and if he does, I hope for his sake, Cole Hamels pitches well rest of the season. I don't necessarily know if I think he would pitch that well rest of the season, but, you know, I don't own him anywhere. So I'll root for him just for this person.
Yeah, I don't root for him either. And as long as I don't think my competitor in that AL only has Hamels. So I think I'd be okay with rooting.
There you go. Good, good.
let's move on and talk about Eddie Rosario, who's another guy who's been kind of on a hot streak as of late. So, interested in your thoughts. Are you picking up Eddie Rosario?
Yeah, this is actually an interesting. So, I actually grew up in Connecticut right along the Sound, Long Island Sound, and the New Britain Rockcats were a AA affiliate of the Twins for probably 7 or 8 years, I want to say, and then they flipped to the Rockies a couple years ago, and then they moved up to Hartford. So way back in 2013, or it might have been 2014, I'd have to check actually, I saw Eddie Rosario as a AA bat, and he was there with Miguel Sano. I think Buxton came through there, Barrios came through there, and a couple other guys. But Rosario was always the guy that was, I think, the, you know, and they do the top 10 list. He was always lingering in like that 10 to 15 range. And I always kind of liked him as a player. You know, I used to go to a lot of those AA games and I saw him a lot. And he was interesting. And I always kind of kept my eye on him. And I have the affinity for a lot of those guys because I saw him come up through the system. So I actually am very happy just on a personal level to see him succeed. And honestly, I looked, he's a top 150 player in Roto. And he was drafted, I think, right along, you know, I would guess in the 350s, maybe 400s. Like, he was a forgotten player as a whole, I would guess. And, I mean, this production's been unbelievable. It's everything you want to see out of a guy that's 25 years old. It's not blow-your-mind production. You know, I think he's around a 15-home run, maybe 6 or 7 stolen base guy. Paces out, he'll end up maybe at peak, maybe 2010-ish, you know, but he's making really good contact. He's cut his swinging strike rate. His strikeouts are down. And I really tried to actually dig in and find if he changed his approach at all. And what I ended up finding was an article from the Star Tribune, which I believe is the Minnesota. Anyone from Minnesota could probably correct me. I don't know if that's their main circular out there or whatever you want to call it. But all that they referenced in the article itself was that he's trying to go the other way and up the middle more, which seems to be just a general blanket statement. But I actually looked back to Fangraphs and looked at his batted ball distribution, and there's really no change from last year. So it created kind of this question in my mind as to what exactly he's changing. Is it just the mental state of trying to stay inside the ball that's allowing him to be more productive? because the strikeouts are down, everything else is down. I don't know. I have a feeling it's maybe more of a discipline pitch recognition thing as opposed to just staying inside the ball. Maybe that's just the general idea of being a more successful hitter. You know, I want to stay inside the ball. You know, Chris Bryant this year is a guy who was very vocal about this preseason. He said that he wanted to stay inside the ball more, and that actually produced itself in the form of his batted ball distribution. If you look at the first 2 months of the year for Chris Bryant, that was one of those guys who was legitimately hitting the ball to right center more, and it actually dropped some of his production overall, but he was a better hitter, more productive hitter, maybe not for fantasy, but in actual real life, you know, war, et cetera, weighted runs created plus, it was a little bit higher, I believe. And but yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see, is it actually he is going the other way more, even though Fangraphs kind of rejects that by his batted ball distribution. I'm interested. I don't really know. There's got to be more to this, but am I picking him up? I actually drafted him, so I'm in a couple NFBC leagues, and I drafted him super, super late in a 15-team draft and hold, and I'm pretty happy to see him in there. And this is also a league where I have Giancarlo Stan and Nolan Arenado, and I'm sure you'd be stunned to find out that I'm in 10th place out of 15. I have absolutely no idea how, Justin, but 10th place out of 15, I have those three guys on my team. Rosario being an absolute steal.
It's got to be pitching. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I know, but it's I hate teams like that. Like, Stan, I've had in my lineup the whole year. I was decently high on him coming into the year, and Nato was a guy that I really wanted in the first round of a lot of leagues. I look at this team on paper, and then I look at its rank, and it just doesn't jive in my head. So, I mean, getting back to the point, if I'm picking them up, 12-team leagues, I would give them a look. Maybe for shorter term as opposed to longer term. Anything deeper than 12 teams, yeah, I would. I don't mind throwing him in there. He's been really productive this year.
I'll tell you, on a little tangent, since you mentioned NFBC, you know, I'm in the draft and hold this year. It's my first time doing an NFBC league.
Yeah, same here.
And, I don't know how to feel about it.
Yeah.
It's one of those
leagues. We can actually have
like,
a little talk about this.
Like,
yeah.
You know, Chuck Anderson, he's a big NFBC guy from our site. He kind of talked me into it. We drafted in the same draft and hold, which made it a little bit interesting because we kept sniping each other since we both had, each other's ranks.
The worst.
Yeah, right there next to each other. And I think I'm pretty sure we drafted within like two spots of each other too. So it was a little bit brutal.
That is hilarious.
But I like trading, and that's here's my thing. I enjoy trading. And, I mean, this was, you know, it's the 50-round NFBC draft and hold.
Yep.
So no pickups throughout the year. I have a total of, you have a total of 23 spots on the team. I have a total of 23 healthy players right now.
Oh, my God. That's like, even worse than my team.
I either have, you know, 27 guys who are either injured on the DL or in the minors. And so, like, I'm, like, sitting there going, well, I guess I don't need to set my lineup the rest of the year. So I just kind of check in every week. And somehow I'm in second, like, in my league.
Wow.
I'm doing really, really well, in spite of the fact that I virtually punted saves. So because I'm really, really struggling in the saves department. I don't know if I'm going to do it again. It was one of those things that I found really interesting, and I wanted to try it out because it's such a big part of the industry nowadays. But I don't necessarily know if I really enjoy it that much.
I got to agree with you. This is actually something that I've been trying to find someone to talk to about. So this is hilarious that you mentioned it. But I'm in the exact same format. I have two NFBC teams this year, and one of them is the exact one you're talking about. 15-team draft and hold. There's no pickups. And I think the biggest thing with me, the other one I'm in is a 12-team with FAB, $1,000 FAB budget. I like that one a lot more, personally. And I'm not doing – I think I'm right around the middle of the pack. I think I'm fifth or sixth. I've been flipping-flopping between that. But – it's tough in the moment when you haven't done it before, trying to figure out what to do with your later picks. That's my biggest problem. I think I went way too heavy on DL'd guys. I remember picking up like Homer Bailey. I went after Tyler Thornburg because I wanted to help on my ratios and just some other weird picks that I probably reached on too much. But at the same time, like playing a season of this out and being in 10th place, basically out of it. I set my lineup every week, but it's just, you know, I don't even know why I'm doing it. It takes like 2 seconds. So I just throw out all my starting pitchers and watch them get lit up and see my ERA skyrocket. But it's weird because it's like I played the whole season out and I still kind of don't know how I would adjust my strategy. You know, like I just need guys who are healthy. Like, is that the strategy? Just try to find the guys that are healthy. It sounds like that's a problem with you, but it's just like it's weird.
I bought some prospects later on.
Okay.
Like Devers is on my team. So that's been a nice little addition. Zimmer is on my team, so that's been a really nice addition. I mean, in considering, You know what I mean? I look over my bench. It looks like I got a couple extra guys actually off the DL now. But, I mean, right now, just on the DL, this isn't including guys who are in the minors, Russell Martin, Greg Bird, Nick Ahmed, Wei-Yin Chen, Kella, Sean Kelly, Trevor May, David Phelps, Garrett Richard, Houston Street. So virtually like my entire pitching staff. Oh, and Kyle Bearclaw, who's actually in my starting lineup because I don't have enough healthy pitchers.
That sounds unbelievable. Oh, my God.
So I just, to me, it's like taking the trading aspect, taking the fab aspect out of it just, to me, limits a little bit of the fun.
Even though
I'm like actually having a successful time at it, I'm not really like that thrilled to do it again next year.
Yeah, I think honestly I might just revert back and do two of the 12-team leagues because I just like the whole FAB process. The FAB bidding, I've never done FAB bidding with $1,000 budgets aside from this year, and I've learned a lot from it. I was talking to Paul Spohr of Fangraphs actually about exactly this at Sabre Seminar. I met him for the first time, and we were talking through. I was like, how are you doing your leagues? And he's like, oh, I'm playing through some NFBCs. And I was like, oh, me too, for the first time, this and that. You know, it's a heavy investment. A lot of these leagues are like $150, $250 buy-ins. The payouts are great, but it's like, you know, I don't know if I'd put that money down again to go through a 15-team league where it just seems like, to me, it's so based on just getting lucky with some certain guys. Like you mentioned, you had some prospects that you bought. I'm thinking back to my team now. I just pulled it up, actually. I had some prospects too, but though the ones that didn't really pan out, I had Barreto. I had Clint Frazier, who's actually been relatively important. But then I had guys like Lewis Brinson, you know, and it's just as a whole, you look at and just not getting production out of those guys. So it's like, what's my strategy? I remember one of the picks I liked was I drafted Brock Holt because I thought, oh, you know, he's a utility guy. He has a lot of positional eligibility. He seems like he's always on the field. He seems like he's kind of productive. And of course he has, you know, vertigo and other issues this year. So it's like, do I just go with a bunch of those utility guys? Do I go with the high upside prospects? You know, in a 15-team league, you can't really play it safe because there's 15 teams. So if you play it safe, you're going to end up seven or six. If you're lucky, maybe five. And then what does that do for you? It does nothing. You know, this is the league where you want to finish top three to get some money back. So it's weird. But if you want to circle back now to Eddie Rosario, actually, I had an interesting question I wanted to ask you. Next 3 years, would you rather have Eddie Rosario or Byron Buxton?
I'm going to take Buxton because he is – one, he's got the carrying tool in the speed that can be a difference maker in fantasy. I mean, I like Eddie Rosario, and I think, like, in a 15-team league is your, you know, fourth outfielder. He's a nice little guy. But ultimately, I mean, you know, his upside is that of like a 2010 guy.
Yeah.
And that just
yeah.
doesn't necessarily play that well in fantasy anymore. Whereas Buxton, even if he struggles to get on base, struggles to hit, his defense is always going to keep him on the field. And his speed is game changing. I mean, he's hitting .232 this year. He's got a .303 on base percentage, 20 stolen bases with that. Like, that's got some real value in fantasy. So, if you know, that's kind of his floor for the most part. You know, I mean, he got demoted this year. He struggled with playing time. I mean, he's done that in only 335 plate appearances. If he puts it all together, we're talking about a guy that could potentially go 1550. So.
Yeah, That's bullish. I like that call on him. I actually think I might diverge from the pack here. I kind of think I might go Eddie Rosario, and the reason I say that is because I know that Eddie doesn't have the speed that Buxton has, but I also don't think that Buxton has the power that Eddie has. You know, he's shown a much more power this year. He's a better approach to the ball. You know, I'm still trying to figure out this whole other way thing going the other way with him. But if his ceiling is a 2010 guy, that's okay. Like, that's not going to be the I guess potential 40-ish stolen bases, maybe. I don't know. I don't think Buxton will ever get to the plate discipline good enough to get to 50. I'd maybe cap him at like 40 in a good year. But the thing that Buxton isn't, I don't think, ever going to do is hit for average. Eddie Rosario is, I think, a 290-ish average this year. And that's something that is relatively undervalued in a lot of roto leagues, is allowing yourself to have that average floor with a guy who can go 20 and 10. And I agree. It's not like we're looking at, you know, Michael Taylor-like production scaled out to a full year where you can actually steal a ton of bases, have really good production, and hit for high average. But I like Eddie Rosario as kind of this fifth outfielder, sixth outfielder, and I guess I'm maybe just really low on Buxton in the fact that I just don't know his potential ceiling is. So I might go Eddie Rosario.
And for me, I mean, that's all about risk-reward.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, I mean, for me, no question, Buxton has the higher ceiling, but has the much lower floor.
I agree with you 100%.
The only thing that helps Buxton's floor is, like I mentioned, he plays a really, really great defense.
Oh, yeah.
Circling back to Rosario and you talking about the fact that, you know, trying to go the other way, one thing he is doing is he's swinging at pitches outside the zone a whole lot less this year.
Yeah.
While he's doing that, he's actually making better contact on pitches outside the zone. So I wonder if maybe the approach change has just been he's going to look for better pitches outside the zone. And when he sees good ones, he's going to drive them.
Yeah, that's my thinking too. Like my initial impression was with this other way approach. You know, when generally when you're saying you want to go the other way with the pitch, what you're allowing the pitch to do is to come deeper into the zone. And by that logic, you see the ball longer, you're able to see the movement longer and where it's going longer. So what you're saying about the discipline out of the zone, maybe he's just reading pitches better as they come into the strike zone. He's not swinging wildly at everything. Maybe it isn't that he's going the other way more. Maybe it's that he's seeing pitches deeper in the zone. And that might be the exact reason why his contact rate's up. He's not swinging outside of the zone as much. So I think it might be something more like that than actually hitting the ball the other way with him. So that's interesting. I like Eddie. I'm interested to see what happens over the next couple of years. He's pretty young, too. He's only 25. And I love changes, positive changes in a guy. You know, he's 17-ish, I think, strikeout rate right now. You know, if, say he cuts that to 16 next year, walks about 9-ish%, 10%, you know, bats 290. It's productive, you know. It's undervalued production. I'm interested to see, you know, what the ceiling is. And I agree that Buxton definitely does have the higher ceiling and the lower floor. So it gets kind of your philosophy as a whole going forward with, and especially the value at which you're getting these guys. That depends, too. I'm not really sure where they're going to land next year in ADP. I'd be interested to see.
Let's talk a little bit about a guy who's starting to get some talk as a guy who could potentially be a sleeper candidate coming into next year. So what are your thoughts on Dinelson LeMay, San Diego Padres starting pitcher who's a rookie this year? High strikeout rate, high ERA. Is this a guy that people should be stashing for next year?
Yeah, interesting. So we were just talking about Buxton. I almost feel like LeMay is like a pitching version of Buxton. Not nearly as much hype, but we're talking about like this risk-reward kind of ideal as a whole, the theme that you could plug onto a lot of guys, I'm sure, you know, especially high-speed contact guys or Dinelson LeMay style, you know, a lot of walks but fantastic strikeout rates. I like him as a whole. Peripherally, his season line looks pretty good. I think his FIP's right around 4, which isn't really reflected in the ERA, I think, which hovers around the 5-ish mark. So, you know, that's going to be one of those things. I feel like he definitely might be undervalued coming to next year, and that's going to be a combination of the fact that he hasn't succeeded in the ERA, which is going to be posted in a lot of his lines. You're going to see that, of course, on a lot of the pages when you're drafting on the draft board. You're going to see the 5-ish ERA, and you're going to be like, oh, no way. And the fact that he's a Padre, too, they're kind of a team that I don't really expect to be in it for the next couple of years. So, but, I mean, he's rocking a 30% strikeout rate, sub-10% walk rate. It's hard really not to like what he's done. And the interesting thing about him particularly is that I kind of see him as like this, you know, he's the Chris Archer-style two-pitch guy. He's got the fastball and he's got the slider, and that's all he's kind of relying on. And the problem with a lot of these guys like this, and I think Archer is the exception, which is why I kind of use him as the example there. Archer can succeed. He's honestly one of those guys who's just fascinated me throughout his career with his ability to succeed with literally just two pitches. But LeMay's changeup isn't that good. I think he throws it around 6-9% of the time. Not that great, but 90% on the other two pitches. And it's just, if he's off on one of those pitches, that's when you get these starts where he walks 4 guys, gives up 4 runs through 4, and he gets pulled. And if he's on with both those pitches, you get that start he had, I think, sometime in June or July, correct me if I'm wrong, where he had, I think he went 6 innings in K-12, just absolutely decimated the lineup that he was facing. I don't remember who it was particularly, but, you know, I do like him going forward, but I am a little bit worried that, you know, the output that we can expect from him, it's going to be capped unless he starts to develop this third pitch, because I don't think his talent level is good enough as archers to progress to the archer level where you can actually succeed with just two pitches at as high of a level as Archer does. So, you know, LeMay, I'm interested to see where he's falling. I don't mind taking a flyer on him. We'll get to a guy a little bit later that I think I like a little bit more as a flyer. Sean Manaea, spoiler alert there. Sorry. But yeah, with LeMay, it's risk reward. I kind of see him as almost the anti Aaron Nola too. Aaron Nola is a guy I wrote about a bit ago for Rasball. I've been a big fan of him all year, and as I'm sure everyone knows now, he's been fantastic. He's slotted in, he's top 100 guy. He's basically an SP2, which really no one saw coming on a team like the Phillies. But Nola's a guy with multiple pitches and multiple plus pitches. So what he's able to do in these starts is the reason that I believe he is one of the highest floors for a guy that isn't, you know, a top 12 guy.
is the fact that if Nola's struggling with one of his pitches, he can opt for another one. It's not like one of those situations where Nola has certain pitches he only throws to lefties or righties. You know, we see a lot of guys who won't throw changeups to lefties or the other way around. So, you know, he's the anti-Nola, basically, Denelson Lament. So we'll see what happens. I'm not sure. What are you thinking about him for next year? Would you take him, you know, maybe in the, say, 20th, maybe 19th, 18th round? Is that kind of where you ballparking where you think he's going to go?
I think that's probably where he's going to go because, like, you know, speaking of Paul Sporer, like, this is one of the guys Paul Sporer has talked about kind of liking going into next year. And Paul also likes to talk about guys in the preseason that he calls wide-awake sleepers. And I think that's what he's going to be. He's going to be one of these guys, like, that people, like, so many people are calling a sleeper that he's no longer a sleeper.
Oh, I see.
You know, I mean, a guy that, you know, everybody.
The James Paxton.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, we saw it with Paxton as, like, the prime example of a guy. So many people were calling him sleeper. By the end of the day, you were having to take him with a top 150 pick, and then really is he a sleeper anymore? I don't think necessarily that Lemet will be a top 150 pick next year, but I think his draft day value may be a little bit higher than his actual value will be. I think this guy needs to be in the bullpen. I mean, he
interesting.
Like,
okay,
I think the two pitches, the slider is fantastic. I think the fastball is decent, but it's straight. And I mean, he doesn't throw either of his other two pitches enough to really matter.
Yeah.
So I mean, he's throwing what, the sinker 3% of the time, the changeup about 7% of the time. I mean, that screams a guy that doesn't have any confidence in those two pitches, and the Fangraphs metrics kind of bear out that they don't have really good movement on either of those pitches, so they're probably getting hit around quite a bit. You know, everybody loves the strikeout rate, and that's what people really start jumping on, but a guy who's, you know, throwing, you know, 4 walks per 9, giving up a homer and a half per 9, and doing it with a really low BABIP, to me, screams someone that I don't want to have anything to do with. I think this guy will be an electric arm out of the bullpen at some point, and I think that's where his future is. He's not as young as I think other people. You know, we were talking about Eddie Rosario being kind of younger than I think a lot of people would have given him credit for.
Yeah.
You know, Lemet is 25 already. You know, this isn't a kid. This isn't like a 23-year-old, 22-year-old coming up for the first time. This is a 25-year-old coming up. And I think the stuff would just play better out of the bullpen. So for me, I'm not going to have him on any teams next year, but I can see why people are tantalized by him.
Yeah, it's definitely reverts back to that carry we're talking about. I like that. That's an interesting take that you like him out of the pen. I think that that's actually something that eventually might happen. You know, if you look at the Padres minor league system as far as pitching goes, it's absolutely stacked. Mm-hmm. They have, I mean, a lot of the guys are a little bit younger, Michael Baez and Lowball. Adrian Morejon, you know, they have Cal Quantrill, they have Mackenzie Gore now. A lot of these guys are a ways off, but I mean, you look 2 years down the road, they're going to be knocking on the door. Lemet will be 27. Mm-hmm. And in that 2 years, for me, it's a question of can he develop the changeup? It's really what it is. You know, it's can he develop that third pitch? Can he, because he's not going to be Chris Archer. I don't think the slider or the fastball, as you mentioned, the fastball is pretty straight. I don't think he's going to turn into a Chris Archer where he just takes off with those two pitches, but you're going to see flashes of like that 12K game from him, and I wouldn't be shocked to see that. And you know, he's going to circulate back to a lot of fantasy waiver wire columns and be like, oh, should you pick up Lemet? And in my honest opinion, it's just going to be, if you want to basically flip a coin every time he goes out, it's a matter of, does he have the fastball command, does he have the slider working? It's those two pitches, and it comes down to that for me. I don't know about out of the bullpen. I think they should give him a little bit more of a leash.
I'm sure they will, because you mentioned, they don't have anything in that rotation right now,
exactly,
or at least going into next year. So I think they'll give him a shot to start. I don't think it's going to be super productive. You know, a guy who's got and he does have a really nice slider, so I will say that. But a guy who's got as nice of a slider as he does, I would hope to see him get more kind of swings and misses outside of the zone, and he's just not getting that. Mm-hmm. People are kind of spitting on it and just waiting on the fastball. You know, it's the major leagues. You know, people are going to catch up to 94, 95.
Yeah,
and especially if they can just wait on it and say, you know, I'm not going to play around with that slider. I'm just gonna wait for the fastball to come at me, and you know, crank back and smash it. So to me, Lemet, I think you're right. If he can develop a third or even a fourth pitch that is average, it doesn't need to be good. If he could have an average third pitch, that would change things for me. I still think he would be very Jonathan Sanchez-esque in terms of having powerful stuff but no command whatsoever.
But that
can be effective at the major league level. I mean, Jonathan Sanchez had some really nice years at the major league level. So not saying that they're the same pitcher. I know Sanchez was a lefty and things like that. But, you know, I'm just saying kind of effectively wild. But until he develops that third pitch, I think he's going to have problems. And that means the future's in the bullpen unless he can develop that. So.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything you just said there, honestly. So I'll be interested to see what Preller does with him going forward. But he's a guy to keep an eye on. It's really about that third pitch for me, though. I think you kind of agree. So we'll see.
Let's talk about Odubel Herrera, who's a guy that I don't think ever gets like enough kind of pub for, you know, just being kind of an all-around good player. It's been a little bit of a down year. You know, I mean, missed a little bit of time. He's not walking quite as much as he has in the past. So, you know, he's kind of always been an OBP asset. You know, things are starting to come together a little bit for him recently. So what are your thoughts on Odubel Herrera?
Herrera is like, it's funny because my dad is a Philly fan. We always talk baseball and he doesn't really like Odubel Herrera, which really isn't surprising. I don't know how many Philly fans really do like him too much, at least after seeing what he's done for the first half of this year. But he's completely flipped his season on its head. And it's one of those things, like, if you could bottle up his changes from the first half to the second half and just give it to players, like, you could make, you know, Byron Buxton a 320 hitter, basically, is what I'm saying. Like, it's just, I don't know what he did. I didn't really look into it. I have to admit, to try to find if he changed his approach or anything, but he was striking out like five more times than he was walking. He had like 84 strikeouts to 15 ish walks. And now that's almost even. And I just don't get how that happened so quickly. You know, he's a guy, I know they always talk about how he purposely takes a lot of time in the box to try to throw off the pitcher's timing, which is just classic. Like, everyone is just going to hate him if he isn't successful, which is basically what he did for the entire first half of the year. He wasn't a good hitter. He's a very, very poor hitter, actually. And he was doing that, and I'm sure Philly fans just got tired of it because they're like, great, you're taking 30 seconds to get in the box, take a swing and miss and strike out, you know? And it's just like, that would drive me insane, you know, if there was anyone on a team I like doing that. Like, oh, my God. But the interesting thing is that he slowed down and stolen bases a lot, and this might be a product of him not hitting too well to start the year and kind of driving down that total as a whole. But if you look at the aggregate stats on the season for him, I think he's outside of the top 150-ish. He's kind of lingering in that 150 to 200-ish range. I think Aaron Altherr has actually produced a little bit more value than him. I do like Altherr a lot personally. But Herrera, I mean, do you have any confidence going forward, Justin, in like what you're expecting from him? Like, I think that he could keep this run going. I think the guys over at CBS, actually, CBS, the podcast they run, mentioned something pretty good, I think, last week or something. They talked about how, you know, I think they were referencing Paul DeJong, actually, from the Cardinals, the shortstop who's been hitting really well. It's like, it doesn't really matter at this point in the season whether you believe in a guy, because we're at the point where if you do believe in him or if you don't believe in him, it doesn't matter. Like, this is kind of the production you're going to get rest of the season. There isn't too much time for a guy to regress back or to accumulate a ton of whatever. You know, you kind of ride the guys you have right now. You know, Polanco, Gregory Polanco is a guy a lot I've seen dropped in a lot of leagues or last couple of weeks just he's been terrible. Carlos Gonzalez hasn't really turned around. You know, it's the point in the season where you just kind of feel okay holding on to guys that are hot, not worrying about them regressing back. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those things with Herrera. It's like he's hot right now. I don't mind playing him in pretty much any format. I do like him a little bit more in points leagues. He's a doubles machine, I think, in the last couple of weeks. He's been not really too much on the roto side just because of the steals. But, I mean, Justin, going forward, like, how do you value him next year? Like, do we expect this slump to start the season where he's basically not ownable, not startable? And do we expect, you know, or do you just want to hold on to him? Like, it's just, it's one of those things where if I see him on draft boards 2018, I don't know how confident I'm going to be in any result to put a lot of stock in him, you know?
I think,
what do you think?
I think it's all going to be draft stock dependent for me. I mean, yeah. if he's going where he was going this year, you know, if people go, well, look at how he ended the season, this is a guy to buy, and he starts shooting up draft boards, then I'm going to be out. But, I mean, since the All-Star break, 382, 452, 696 triple slash, 6 home runs, 2 stolen bases. Like, that's
raking.
A monster. I mean, and that's kind of, you know, I think we expected maybe a few less home runs and more stolen bases, but it's hard to steal bases when you're jogging around them. So I'm
that's true.
I mean, I think I'm buying. And I think, okay. I think if it, I mean, obviously he's not going to hit 382 rest of the way, but you know, even if he hits, you know, like 300, you know, or 290 rest of the way, I mean, you know, it's not going to overinflate his numbers to the point where people are going to be freaking out next year. And I think people will be kind of discouraged by the lack of speed, or the less amount of speed that you've gotten this year. And I think he's going to be a little bit of a discount guy coming in next year. Yeah, he struggled early on in the year. He's made adjustments, got a little bit of rest, and he's been actually fantastic. I mean, one of the best players in baseball for the last month or so. So, I mean, I think I'm buying. It's so hard, though. I mean,
it's tough, right?
He was so awful in the first half. But, I mean, he's young, too. He's 25 years old. So, I mean, I'm gonna take another shot with him. I still love Aaron Altherr. So, I mean,
big Altherr fan, too.
I mean, I'm not going to jump off that bandwagon either. So, I think the Phillies got a bright future. Your dad's going to be happy at some point.
I hope so. For his sake, he's been pulling his hair out. That's probably why he's partially bald now. Ripping his hair out, watching Odubel Herrera strike out and take 30 seconds to take a hack that he falls down on. But, jeez, Odubel Herrera, what a character.
let's talk about Gio Gonzalez. And, you know, actually, I'm going to pair him up with the guy you mentioned earlier, Sean Manaea. So we'll talk about both these guys kind of simultaneously. And the reason I do that is because I was at the Barf draft this weekend. You know, the Bay Area Roto Fantasy League that mm-hmm. we started for baseball a couple years ago decided this year that we were going to add football to the rotation. And I was hanging out with Doug Thorburn, and we were watching Sean Manaea's pitch against the Orioles. And he goes, man, he goes, I never thought about this before. But Sean Manaea is Gio Gonzalez. And then he broke out the mechanics, you know, broke down, you know, all the things that each of them do. And I was like, holy shit, you're right. And I mean, there's no one I trust more in the industry. I mean, I don't, technically Doug's still in the industry. He's got his podcast. Yeah. I know he's the big dude over at the National Pitching Institute now. So he's not doing a lot of the fantasy stuff anymore. But there's no one I trust more when it comes to pitching mechanics and pitchers than Doug. And so, you know, let's talk about both these guys. What are your thoughts on them moving forward and then into next year?
Well, first off, I think Doug is on the Baseball Holics podcast, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a great pod. I've listened to that.
Both him and Sammy
Breed or whatever.
Yeah, both him and Sammy were at the draft this weekend. It's always nice. Great to hang out with them.
That's cool. Yeah, they run a good pod over there. I think I subscribed to that on iTunes. Actually, I listen to it every now and then. It's a cool one because
it's a must subscribe. It really is.
Yeah, and it's cool because it's not as like everyday-ish as like a CBS one. It's definitely more of like a batch. Like I think they do it. Is it like every other week or something like that? I notice it only pops in every now and then. But it's cool
I think it's like whenever they get around to it.
Yeah, they get through a lot of information in like 2 hour span, and it's pretty valuable. And they got, as you mentioned, very good perspectives. But that's actually interesting. It's funny. I looked at these guys kind of independently as you threw them in the notes, I didn't actually think about the mechanic comp there. But I kind of want to go back and watch some video. But I know they probably throw both pretty low three quarters ish. I think Manaea might be a little lower from the left side, but they're both southpaws. You know, that's interesting. And you know, they're kind of on the different sides of the age range here. I guess I'll start with Manaea first because I kind of alluded to him a little bit earlier. I've heard a little bit that the reason that he's kind of deteriorated here and that I think they've actually considered maybe shutting him down or skipping him or something like that, I heard, is because he's tired. But I don't really understand why people are saying that he is tired, because last year he threw 165 innings between a couple levels. This year I think he's only around 124 between AAA and the majors. So I don't know if it necessarily has to do with being tired as a whole. I just wonder if it's a rhythm thing. You know, I believe he was did he hit the DL at some point this year? I kind of feel like he did miss some time.
Yeah,
he definitely did. So it's just one of those things. Like, I don't know if he just hasn't gotten a rhythm. Maybe it's just not his year. The one thing that I'm a little bit concerned with him is that last year he dominated left-handed hitters. He's one of those guys because he's probably thrown from such a low three-quarter slot or basically full sidearm slot that I'm sure it's very hard for a lot of lefties to pick up. But this year that's kind of deteriorated a little bit. I wonder if it's an arm slot change, release point change, or maybe just a movement change overall with some of his pitches. But I usually don't like when a guy has a very strong asset, like he dominates left-handed hitters, and that kind of goes away, because it's like, after that, what are you left with? You're left with an okay pitcher against right-handed hitters. I know he's always had kind of a bit of trouble. That's always been where split differential is. But he's interesting. I actually think, you know,
for 2018, he becomes an interesting guy for me because his strikeouts have actually gone up a little bit. His swinging strike rate has gone up a little bit. His control, I think, has wavered a little bit, but I don't mind the uptick in strikeouts as long as it doesn't coincide with a massive loss of control, which hasn't happened for him. And he's another guy we're looking at, Lamette, whereas he's kind of have a gross ERA, quote-unquote, coming into the next year. I think the same thing happens with Minaya, but his FIP's right around that 4-ish range, which is basically the baseline for, you know, these SP5, SP6 kind of guys we're talking about. So he went actually as an SP4 last year from where I was looking at some NFBC ADP. He actually went ahead of Aaron Nola, which I'm sure every Minaya owner that drafted Minaya in front of Nola is banging their head against the table for. But I like Minaya a bit going into next year, I have to say. So I'm interested to see where that ADP falls. And as you're saying with Lamette, you know, he's kind of that wide awake sleeper that Spore was mentioning. I kind of feel like Minaya might be that, but I really hope he's not. I hope that he just stays a sleeper and I could grab him late. But I have a feeling, you know, if I don't know, now that I think about it, if he's having a kind of a bad second half, or maybe he will just fall under the radar with a lot of people. So we'll see. But I mean, I'll pass it to you for Gio, actually. But Gio's a guy who's a little bit older, and he's actually a guy that's come up a lot in a lot of dynasty trades that I've been thrown on Twitter, people asking me. There's a couple like Gio Gonzalez to a team that is winning and I'm trying to rebuild, and I'll get back like Ryan Healy and a couple other guys. And I kind of just like, I think you could get more for Gio. You know, he's a top 100 guy right now. I was looking at his season to date ranks. He's right around guys like Corey Seager production-wise, Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Michael Conforto, James Paxton. He's not too far up from, you know, he's been really, really good. And it's just one of those guys that the CBS guys were saying, you know, at this point in the season, like, I just don't see why you would doubt him going forward. Even if next year he becomes the guy in Gio Gonzalez, where I feel like he's going to be the classic, like he's being overdrafted, you know, you're putting too much stock in what he did last year. Look at the bigger picture. So, what do you feel about Gio Gonzalez the rest of the season, Justin?
I mean, I think you ride the hot streak. I mean, it's playing National League, a pretty decent park for pitching, with one of the best offenses behind you. He's out pitching his peripherals. I mean, FIP is almost four. His XFIP is over four. But this dude's been a top 10 pitcher, according to ESPN Player Rater, all year long.
That's nuts.
I mean, you know, he's limiting damage. He's still walking too many guys, you know, but he's not giving up home runs, which, I mean, he really hasn't done in quite a long time. But, I mean, his strand rate's really high. Like, all the underlying peripherals, oh my God, this is going to come to a screeching halt at some point. But doesn't mean it has to come now.
Yep.
And I mean, you know, he gets the pitch in the AL East against some really crappy competition. You know, he doesn't have to face his own team, which is like the best part of being a Nationals pitcher, is you get the AL East without the best team in it. I think I'm riding the hot streak. I mean, next year, wherever he goes, he's going to be too expensive.
I agree. Yeah, that's a very good point.
I'm sure he's not going to go as like a top 20, 25 guy, but I won't have him as a top 35 starting pitcher next year.
I probably won't.
You know, like I said, everything screams massive amounts of regression, but I kind of agree with the idea that, you know, there's, what, 6 weeks left in the season. Yeah, I mean, at this point, you just go with it and hope for the best.
Yep.
You know, kind of set it, forget it. You know, he's the man who's brought you to a championship. You know, why are you going to jump off of it now? I mean, if you're in a keeper dynasty league and you're trying to rebuild, yeah, sure, you trade Gio, get whatever you can. I don't know. I think there's so many people that are afraid the regression is coming, like, instantaneously, that I don't know how much you can really get for him.
But, sure.
I mean, with the landscape of pitching, the way it's been, especially with health-wise, you know, guys like Kershaw and Paxton and Strasburg, you know, all on the DL right now, Robbie Ray on the DL. I mean, you know, you should be able to get, you know, at least a decent return for a guy like Gio. Minaya is a guy that a few weeks ago I kind of talked about with Laura Michaels on my radio show, about how I really felt like this was a guy that next year could take a step up into the top 20 of starting pitchers. And
I like that.
I know that the last three starts have been really, really bad, but if you take those out, and I know it's unfair to like cherry pick, but you know, if you just go through what his stats were through July, he had a 3.82 ERA, almost 9 strikeouts per 9, walking 3 batters per 9, giving up, less than a homer per 9. You know, those are pretty good numbers from a 25-year-old in, you know, his first full season at the major leagues. And I think this is a guy that will take a step forward next year. I kind of, you know, I secretly love the fact, like, that he's kind of blowing up right now. Because, like you mentioned, like, you know, you look at the surface numbers now and they're not great. I mean, his ERA has raised almost 0.8 since the end of July.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that's going to look gross in 2018.
It is. It's going to look gross. People are going to discount that. And I think I'm going to be all over. I hope he's not a wide awake sleeper, you know, yeah, that Paul talks about. There is definitely a chance he could be. But I'm going to be on the bandwagon for sure.
I think I will be too. And, you know, actually backtracking to something we were talking about earlier in the show, you know, that guy was trying to ship for a guy like Cole Hamels because he wanted to win the championship, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think we'd both agree. Would you take Gio Gonzalez over Cole Hamels rest of season?
Yes.
We're talking just 2017.
For sure.
So, you know, that's the situation where I might be more willing. If I was really confident that I had a shot at the championship, I needed one more bat, you know, or excuse me, one more arm to push me forward and kind of stabilize my rotation, I'd be more inclined to trade for a guy like Gio Gonzalez who's seen success, even though we do believe that it will tail off. You know, I'd be much more inclined to go after a guy like Gio than a guy like Cole Hamels, you know? Mm-hmm. What are you betting on with Cole Hamels? You're betting on three starts. I'd rather bet on the 3.5-4 months we've seen of Gio Gonzalez and his success than Cole Hamels, honestly.
And you might be able to, because people, like I said, people don't believe, you might be able to ship, like, Kopech for a Gio Gonzalez and, like, maybe a bat that is overperformed, you know, go get a Gio Gonzalez and an Andrelton Simmons.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, too. You know, that's, I'd be much more inclined to do that if I knew I needed to win this year, didn't really care about the next couple of years, mm-hmm. and I didn't want to deal with the Kopech potential arm struggles or the upside risk reward that he has. I'd be more inclined to go. Like, I was looking at the WAR leaderboards. I know it doesn't directly apply to fantasy, but Andrelton Simmons is, like, right under Jose Altuve. I was just blown away. I was like, where did this come from? From Simmons, I feel like he was one of those guys where it's just, you know, he sat so long where it was just really good defense. And I really don't like guys like that where they mm-hmm. have a really good defensive prowess and it kind of carries over. And I was really bullish on Francisco Lindor early in the season. I paid for him in a couple leagues. And, you know, I kind of feel like now looking back that some of his defense plays into his fantasy value because, you know, the name value of some guys is on that defensive side of things. And you don't get any value for that in fantasy. So it's like, it's tough.
Javi
Baez
being like one of the like, main examples. I will say, I mean, like at least defense, great defense keeps you on the field.
That's a good point. You were talking about that with Buxton too. I remember.
Yeah.
So I do agree with that. You could buy yourself playing time, but
especially
you know,
in deeper formats, that's important. Like if you're playing an AL only, you're playing a 15-team mixed or deeper.
Very true.
Like at bats are currency.
Oh, 100%. That's one thing I've noticed. I played NL only. I think the first time 2 years ago, whereas I've been playing fantasy for a while, but I've gotten into a lot more of the onlys. And, you know, you just need guys who are warm bodies or good bodies in NL only. Like Sogard, I picked up Sogard, I think, for $2 at 100 fab in this NL only CBS league. And I was loving that. I mean, Sogard was just basically a warm body. Like he had a hot stretch. You know, this is exactly what we're talking about. Just a guy who can get playing time is valuable in only leagues. So, yeah, that's a good point. But, I mean, if you're looking at 12-team leagues or so, I don't know how much playing time matters too much, but deeper than that, 100% agree with you.
All right, let's finish out with the last guy. That's Manny Machado. And so Machado has had kind of an underwhelming year this season. You know, if you drafted Machado this year, you drafted him in the first round, no doubt about it, putting up a .259, .317, .469 line, still 22 home runs and 6 stolen bases. So, I mean, it's not like you're getting no value whatsoever, but definitely not what you paid for on draft day. So my question for you, Lance, is how do you rank Manny Machado for the rest of this year? And then more importantly, where do you think he goes next year?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned where does he go next year, because that's exactly what I had in my notes to ask you. It's because I actually kind of looked into it a little bit. And 2 years ago when he had that season where he stole a ton of bases, that's when he returned. I'm sure he returned top 20 value, probably top 10-ish. He was probably way up there because he had a ton of home runs and a ton of bags, really at average, et cetera. You know, the last 2 years, you look at Manny Machado, and he's been kind of this 40 to 80 overall guy that you pay top dollar for because he's been relatively consistent. So this is the first year where we've run into him being kind of inconsistent. But if you look since the All-Star break, he's slashing .336, .373, .533. Whereas you just said his full season line, you know, we're looking at a guy who I think will go again in the first two rounds. I think he's going to be a top two round pick.
I know he's not going to have shortstop eligibility. I believe that's going to drop off depending on your league.
No games of shortstop this year.
So he's not going to have it anywhere, basically. So he becomes a pure third baseman. You know, you have a lot of those guys. I think he ends up in the, if I had to ballpark it, say, let's say, you know, 16 to 24-ish. So back, yeah, what's that? That's kind of middle of the second round. I'll say middle of the second round guy next year. You know, and I think that he could kind of inflate a little bit. I don't know if I see him as a good first rounder just because the stolen bases not being there as they were a couple of years ago. But rest of the season, I love him. You know, this is, again, one of those guys who has been so productive in the second half that there's no reason to doubt that this production will tail off. Rest of the season, I think he's a top, right around that same window. I'll say top 15-ish, you know, and maybe tick that down a little bit for next year. But I do like that. So last year, I don't believe he stole any bases. This year, he's stolen six. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'd like to see the kind of balance between the – I don't remember how many stole 2 years ago, but I'm sure it was over 15 or 20-ish. I'd like to see that. Like, if he could be a 10 stolen base guy, like Chris Bryant, I think, has kind of in that window this year. And, I mean, a non-zero number is really good in the stolen base department. If you're looking at a first-round pick that basically provides zero stolen bases, you know, you look at a guy like Miguel Cabrera. It's not going to steal any bases, maybe one or two he'll luck into. You know, a non-zero guy that ends up with, like, just that round double-digit stolen bases is extremely valuable. It's just one of those things that adds value. It kicks you up from being that, you know, 40 overall guy to the 25 overall guy. And that immediately appreciates your value for the next coming year. So, you know, I don't really know what was built into that slump early in the season, but I really like him going into next year. And he's one of those guys that you're paying for the consistency in, you know. I don't know if I trust him to produce, say, top 20 value. You tend to see a lot of guys who just have kind of these quote-unquote career years in that top 20 window, but I think that he's a guy that'll consistently be a top 30 to 50 guy. He's always going to be in that window. He's going to provide enough power, enough average. He's going to hit in that lineup in a good enough spot to produce counting stats, but you're going to have to pay up for it. So it's really a matter of, do you want to pay up for the consistency? Are you going risky on the other side of your lineup? A lot of lineup construction, or draft, I guess, draft board construction, team construction concepts around Manny Machado that'll drive where I'd want to take him. But I think he ends up in that kind of mid-second roundish window. I'd be interested, Justin, if you think he's a first rounder. Would you take him in the first round?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I've already done virtually two drafts this year for next season.
Oh, interesting. So that's awesome. I didn't know that.
I did a mock draft back in July, or during the All-Star break. Tim McLeod of Prospects 361 puts together a way too early mock draft every year at the All-Star break, and I've been lucky enough to be a part of that the last two or three seasons with guys like Ryan Bloomfield and Andrew Lamont was in it, Laura Michaels was in it, and so Machado went 16th. It's a 15-team league. He went 16th.
Interesting. So it's right in the window I'm talking.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm in a three-sport draft right now, which is baseball, basketball, and football. But the
That's
baseball
crazy.
Season is for next year. And while Machado went in, I believe, the sixth, he went in the sixth round of this three-sport draft, that would be the equivalent of a first-round pick next year. Because baseball stayed away from early on in this draft. People focused on football and basketball. So I want to say he was like a top 10 pick in this draft.
It's tough.
It's really tough because I was hoping he'd come at a discount. And And I don't think he's going to. And the fact that he loses shortstop eligibility is a huge hit to his value. It's nice to see the stolen bases have come back. And the fact that he's hitting like, I don't know, I want to say he's hitting like 320 or something like that in the second half.
Yeah, 333, I think, right around there.
I mean, that is really – 336 in the second half.
336,
so,
there you go.
I mean, that's super encouraging, but third base is extremely deep. I mean, so deep. And if he – there's going to be no discount, and he loses shortstop eligibility, I'm going to be out on him if he's, a first-rounder or early second-rounder.
Yeah.
I would want him outside the top 20, and I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at a guy like Jake Lamb. Jake Lamb is a guy that I think a lot of people have been very skeptical on, and I think each of the last 2 years he's been a top, I want to say top four third baseman, maybe even top three.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Jake Lamb's a guy who isn't going to go, I would strongly bet, in the top 25, you know, top 20-ish. Maybe he ends up in the 30 to 40-ish window. But Jake Lamb is a guy that, you know, has probably equaled to outproduce Manny Machado in the last two seasons, if you look at it. And Jake Lamb is going at what you'd quote-unquote say a discount, as this discount we're talking about. So if you're looking, you're saying third base is really deep. Jake Lamb is a great example of third base being very deep because he's going – he's not going for the Manny Machado price tag, but he's producing Manny Machado value, you know? And he's almost like we were just talking about how Mania's having a bad second half, which is going to drive down his ADP come 2018. The opposite is going to happen with what Manny Machado is doing, you know? And it's the same concept for Aaron Judge in the reverse form. So Manny Machado's having such a good second half, it's going to drive up his value. Whereas a guy like Aaron Judge is having a bad second half where it's going to drive down his value. So there's a lot of this interplay with looking at 2018 ADP where a lot of people are going to go back to the recency bias of the second half and go, oh, man, I remember when Judge sucked and he was struck out in 30-whatever straight games or something like that. Like, I don't know if I want him in the first round. I'll take him maybe in the middle of the second round. Whereas if you flip-flop those two halves for Judge, say Judge started really bad and then had that crazy stretch in this month here into next month, Judge is going to be probably a top 8 pick, I would bet. You know, a lot of people are going to call upon that recency bias of having that end of the second half. You know, that second half, oh, I think that's going to be more predictive of the of how he's going to play in that next season than the first half or than the season as a whole. When in reality, I believe that a lot of stats would show you that the season as a whole is the best predictor of that coming season as opposed to the second half. And the qualifier for that is if you see a mechanical change or if you see a strong adjustment, you know, or something tangible, you know, oh, he changed his arm slot, he pitched really well in the second half as opposed to the full season. So, you know, there's a lot of qualifiers that go into that as a whole. But I'm interested to see. I don't think I take Manny Machado, as you mentioned, because the lack of shortstop eligibility in the third base. I think that was a big tantalizer for a lot of people with Machado was paying up for the shortstop because we were kind of uneasy about where a lot of shortstops were going. So we were like, all right, Manny Machado, he's going to play third base. We know he has a lot of power. Let me take him, slot him as a shortstop and see what happens. So
yeah, and
I think that'll kill him a little bit.
To your point about kind of comparing Jake Lamb and Manny Machado, Jake Lamb through this season, 25 home runs, 90 RBIs, 4 stolen bases, 264 average. Manny Machado, 22 home runs, 6 stolen bases, only 69 RBIs, and a 259 average. Lamb beats Machado in three of those 4 categories I was just talking about. If we added in runs scored, Lamb wins that one as well. He's only losing to Machado by 2 stolen bases. Lamb did go 3 spots ahead of Machado in that mock draft back in July.
Wow. Really? Mm-hmm. I'm very surprised. See, I might have been way underselling him. I haven't seen any kind of preliminary 2018 draft boards, but you think where do you think Lamb's going to end up? I did not think that he would be that.
I think he's going to end up farther back. I mean, okay, you know, okay. he slowed down quite a bit. It'll be interesting because there's just so many great third basemen. You've got Arenado, you've got Lamb,
yep.
You've got Chris Bryant, you've got Machado, you've got Jose Ramirez, Sano,
yeah.
Donaldson starting to turn it around now. You know, so I mean, for me, it's like, it's going to be hard to take Arenado in the top 5 or 6, even though he probably deserves to be, because there's so much depth, you know, later on in the draft. I mean, because
you know,
we're not even talking about guys like Travis Shaw, who's been the number one third baseman this year, or
that's a good
Anthony
point.
Rendon, who's been fantastic, or Alex Bregman, who's starting to turn it around. I mean, you know, I mean, there's just so much depth at third base that it's going to be really hard for me to pull a trigger on a third baseman in the first round when I feel like I could get a superstar one in the second.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see 2018 ADP now that we're talking about some of these guys, because Rendon is a guy that I know Gray Albright of Raswell is super high on him. A lot of people, I think, had him past 100 overall. I think Gray had him in like the 60s. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then how Rendon has played this year has just been unbelievable. Yeah, you're getting me excited for 2018 ADP.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
I think last year at Friends of Fantasy Benefits, we did an industry mock draft in September, and I'm thinking we may need to do another one.
I like it.
All right. That is going to wrap us up for this episode. Lance, thanks for joining me.
Of course, man. It's been a pleasure. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely. Why don't you tell people again where you can reach on social media and then plug all your work?
Yeah, awesome. So on Twitter is the main thing I use a lot. Tweet a ton of baseball. Really, don't really tweet anything else. At Lance Brosdow, that's LanceBrozdow, first 7 letters of my last name. Check me out on there. I run, own, and operate, managing editor of Big3Sports.com. Generally, that actually just kind of coincides with a lot more just general baseball talk. I throw my fantasy rankings up there, which I periodically update. But a lot of my my analysis on the week-to-week basis for fantasy goes to Razzball.com on Sundays. I do a Sunday column for them. So that's really cool. I kind of just tend to do a sandbox there. I look at whatever I kind of want coming into that week. Recently, it's been kind of looking at some guys that I like for 2018 and how they've produced so far. So I looked at Aaron Nola. Mike Clevenger is a guy that I kind of like coming into next year very early here. Bradley Zimmer, some other guys. So Razzball, I also write for BP Bronx, Baseball Prospectus, Bronx local site, all the Yankees coverage over there. I also do game recaps for Viva Albertos, which is the St. Louis Cardinals SB Nation site, on Tuesday nights. I run a podcast called the Two Strike Approach Podcast. We don't really do too much fantasy on that, although we do kind of have a Thursday fantasy show going that we're going to phase out. So I like talking to a lot of the industry people there, just some more journalism side things. As I mentioned, I'm on kind of a ballpark tour right now. I'm going to see six stadiums. So I'm actually probably going to do a follow-up column on that and my experience with that. That'll be up on big3sports.com. I encourage you to check it out. And I'm actually trying to go over and see some Padres prospects in the Fort Wayne Tin Caps, which is the A-ball team. I know this is how you know you're a baseball nut, is when you're trying to redo your road trip schedule to see who is one of my favorite prospects, Fernando Tatis Jr., who's a shortstop. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be cool. I'm hoping to do a little scouting piece on that and throw that up on my site as well. And, you know, there's a lot of other stuff going up on my site. And I mean, honestly, the main thing is just follow me on Twitter and you'll see all my work kind of aggregated. I'm trying to come up with a better system to do that on my site for now. But Twitter, at Lance Braza, that's the way to go, big3sports.com. And thanks a ton, Justin. This was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for coming on. You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Like I said at the top, give us a 5-star review and get some free swag. Like JSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSS iTunes. And then you can read all my work over on Fangraphs, right, 4 to 5 days a week. I also put stuff up on friendsoffantasybenefits.com periodically, including our football ranks that have just gone up, updated ranks today for fantasy football season. You can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Thursdays. I can't even remember what time now, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific on the Tout Wars Hour with Laura Michaels. And you can hear me on this podcast 2 to 3 days a week, the football podcast twice a week. And that is going to wrap us up for this episode. For Lance and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.